good morning, afternoon, evening, late night, whatever it is, because, hey, you're doing this on your own time.
That's what we love about the Stampeder podcast. You know, you can listen to us 24/7, 365 days of the year. You can go back to last year's podcast. Hey, bottom line is we love to talk football.
We are everywhere. And who are we? I'm Dave Rowe.
And I'm Jock Wilson.
And this is the Calgary Stampeder podcast, another edition thereof. Jock, coming off the bye week here, Calgary Stampeder's getting back to work after that week one loss to Ottawa. Dave Dickinson not happy with the way his team played at all, and frankly, nor should he have been.
No.
I mean, obviously, there were some concerns going into this season. Obviously, we knew it was going to be a bit of a work in process, but still disappointing losing the Red Blacks the way they did.
I know the general feeling is, hey, it's only one game. Let's not jump off a bridge. Let's not, you know, say the team is doomed and, you know, not going to go anywhere this year. But I tell you what, there are legitimate concerns with this football club, and there are, because when you lose 12 starters, you know, from your Grey Cup championship mm-hmm. team, whether it's through the NFL, whether it's through retirement, whether it's with players signing with other teams, there is going to be change. And we knew it was going to take a little bit of time for this team to gel. That's why I think week number three is going to be a very interesting week for the Calgary Stampeders. You've got the BC Lions in. They have the same issues. They have no running game. Their offensive line is not very good, and their defense is a mess as well.
And Mike Riley shaved his beard off.
Well, exactly right. And so,
it's that bad. And so
the bottom line is, here's the Calgary Stampeders. They lost both ends of the trenches, you know, with mm-hmm. the offensive line and the defensive line against the Ottawa Red Blacks. So what's going to give this weekend? This is going to be a very, very interesting game, because both teams, I think, are going to be very, very motivated.
Now, we knew that the Calgary Stampeder defensive line was going to be an issue. You can't lose guys like Jagared Davis and Micah Johnson and Flowa Arimolade and not be a little bit thin. But to get pushed around the way they were in week one against Ottawa, not exactly known for having a real dangerous offensive line, that's problematic. And you lose Junior Turner with a season-ending injury. Essamer Abure, he was banged up by the end of the game. They had barely four guys that could stand, and they were exhausted at the end of the game. That made such a huge difference. The play where Dominic Davis goes in for what proved to be the game-winning touchdown, Cordero Law was trying to run him down, and he had absolutely nothing in the tank. So you go out, you get a Jabbar Westerman, a veteran who was available on the free agent market. You're trying to spool up some of your draft choices from this year to create some competition. But simply put, Brett Monson has to get more somehow out of that line.
And let's not forget, Mike Riley may be the best running quarterback in the Canadian Football League.
Yes.
He is certainly the toughest quarterback in the Canadian Football League, because he just got punished by the Edmonton Eskimos in Edmonton. And yet, like the Energizer Bunny, he just keeps going and going and going. So I think that's going to be very interesting. We know the Lions don't have much of a running game, so that could be a godsend for the Calgary Stampeder defensive line, Dave, as you talk about. But Mike Riley still scares me, because Mike Riley has had some very good games against this Calgary Stampeder team, and that's when the Stampeders, you know, were working on all cylinders.
Yeah, and, you know, Mike Riley can still take a hit, but again, he just keeps adding a year to his age every season that he plays, and at some point, it's going to be one hit too many. You don't want to see it with Mike Riley, but time, as they say, is undefeated. The other concern for me, and this wasn't supposed to be a problem coming in, was that Stampeder offensive line and the fact that they just couldn't get any push on the Red Blacks defense and were unable to spring Don Jackson. Because, again, when you've got problems on defense, you win by keeping your offense on the field. And the Stampeders, it was embarrassing that time of possession stat at the end of the game.
Well, I think it's twofold. You know, the running game, which was non-existent, and we know how much Dave Dickinson likes to run the ball. He likes to have about a 50-50 split. You know, maybe not completely 50-50, 40-60, but he likes to establish the running game. But as he said on Sports Talk with Jock when I did my weekly coaches show with him, he said, bottom line is, I wasn't working. And if it's not working, I'm just not going to go there and put my team in a second and long situation every single time. So I understand that. That's why they had to go to the air attack. And guess what? Bo Levi Mitchell wasn't clicking. And so you talk about the offensive line. And you're right. I didn't think it was going to be an issue with the three Americans on there, but they didn't open the holes for the run. And they certainly didn't protect Bo Levi Mitchell, because I'll say this, the number of years that you and I have been watching this team, I've never seen Bo Levi Mitchell have as much pressure as he did from that Ottawa defense. He was at times running for his life, and he got hit a lot.
And he had some good throws out there, but he was also missing some receivers. Again, changes in the receiving core. They've got to work on
some consistency
there. But
is that from pressure or is that from Bo just forcing?
Yeah. I think a little bit of both. Bo trying to force balls and just having to run for his life a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. Again, two things that weren't issues. The defensive secondary, when you pick four balls and one of them for a touchdown and you still lose the game, that tells you your secondary is not really a problem. And special teams, again, looking like a strength with the kicking of Rob Baver.
Well, and again, you've got the one rookie on the offensive line, and that is Ryan Sevier, the first-round draft pick from 2018, and he has to be a little bit better. But, you expect more from Derek Dennis. You expect more from Yukonbury Williams. You expect more from Nila Cassitati, because these guys are veterans.
Yeah,
Shane Bergman. These guys are the veterans. These guys, have been there before. I think the Calgary Stampeder offensive line is going to be better this weekend against the BC Lions, but we'll certainly see, because I think what's quite clear right now in the Canadian Football League, and you tell me if I'm wrong, we're only seven games in. We're only heading into week three, but right now I've got four teams that are ahead of the class. Mm-hmm. Winnipeg, Hamilton, Ottawa, and Edmonton, and then you've got these other teams, Calgary, Saskatchewan, BC, Montreal, and Toronto. They all have some big warts, so we're going to see. But again, we might get a better indication of where exactly Winnipeg and Edmonton and Hamilton and Ottawa are this week.
You can't call week three a must-win game, but when you look at both of these teams, the Stampeders, week one loss and some concerns, BC Lions 0-2, it starts to be a little bit of nervy times if you do lose this week. I'm looking forward to chatting with Devon Claybrooks. I want to find out just what the transition to head coaching has been like for him. How do you learn to communicate with the other side of the ball when you've been a defensive guy all of your life? What is it like just being the overseer as opposed to the guy that's in the room every day? How is he making that adjustment?
Well, and again, we've always said Devon is the defensive genius, and yet he's got a defensive coordinator that has a lot more experience than Devon Claybrooks and Rich Stubler. So that's interesting.
That's the guy he learned defense from.
Exactly. And what's really interesting is there's the most experience right there on that BC Lions coaching staff with the Stubbs, but the rest of that coaching staff is pretty young and pretty inexperienced.
Yeah, and so a very important game. Certainly not going to call it a must-win game for either team, because you still got a whole lot of season.
You want to call your shot
to go
Stamps
here.
Win? You're thinking you're not confident.
I want to be more confident than I am, Jacques.
I think it's a coin flip. I really do.
Yeah, 50-50 game. Again, see how the Stamps come off the bye week. They're traditionally very good off the bye week, but the Lions have had that extra week of on-field action just to try to work out some of the lumps, and there are very many lumps.
Yes. No, and it's so true, Dave, and I think, again, I don't want to say it's a must-win game, but boy, from a confidence perspective, you start the season 0-2. When was the last time we saw that happen with this football club? Especially when you're hosting the Grey Cup championship game in November, Grey Cup 107, you get off to an 0-2 start, and now you're fighting to get back into the playoff picture. You have to be a really bad team not to make the playoffs in the Canadian Football League, and I don't think the Calgary Stampeders are a bad team, but they're a team that does need some work.
I want to go off in a little bit of a different direction here and look at some of the other early season stories in the league. Boy, I tell you, I wasn't expecting to say this, but last week I watched the Ottawa-Saskatchewan game. That was the game of the year so far, going back and forth. We were wondering where are the points going to come from for Craig Dickinson and the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and they were running up the offense. The Ottawa Redblacks, again, Dominic Davis is turning into a real feel-good story in the early going here. Those two teams are, I think, pleasant surprises.
Well, you're going to remember my preseason power rankings when I had the Saskatchewan Roughriders ranked number two in my power rankings, and I did because I thought they had this vaunted defense. I really thought this defense was going to carry this team. That defense sucks.
Ottawa drops 41 on them.
44 on them,
44,
actually.
Yeah.
They dropped 44 on them. So it's like, where is this defense? And Cody Fajardo looked pretty damn good. So he got the offense going. And if you score 41 points in the Canadian Football League, you expect to win. But Micah Johnson, he looks like a shadow of himself. Is he missing Devon Claybrooks? What's happening with that Saskatchewan defense? Because that defense, we talk about Calgary. Calgary's defense, you know, we can talk probably about Toronto's defense giving up a whole whack of points too, but I expected more from the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and Saskatchewan without their number one quarterback, you know, can Cody Fajardo do it again in back-to-back weeks? Time will tell. I feel bad for Craig Dickinson. He's one of the nice guys in the Canadian Football League. Right now, that team's got some huge issues.
Yeah, Craig Dickinson is, again, he's a guy that we just love. Got to wish well for him. But right now, I just wonder. I mean, I think, that team could be a little more entertaining than we thought. But again, they are now no wins and two losses.
Although they do have Toronto this weekend.
Yeah.
On Canada Day.
What's that smell? Oh, it's the Argos. I was hugely disappointed about that because, again, just, you know, preseason is preseason. But like I said to you guys going into this, I had a little bit of a feeling about the Argos, and apparently the old sixth sense not working too well because they were just horrid in all three phases.
You know, I do a little feature called Sports Geek of the Day on Sports Talk with Jock, as you know. And when you stink it up at home, and you are honoring one of the greatest quarterbacks in Canadian Football League history, in Ricky Ray, and you're trying to establish a fan base in your city. It's a good, you know, the fans that come out, I think they're good football fans.
They're doing a lot of things right in Toronto, just in terms of how they're marketing the team and how they're trying to build a fan
base.
When
you're only getting 5,000 or 6,000, and then you'd lay that stinker on your fans at home to kick off the season. How does that get people excited about your football club?
How do you rebound from that? Yeah. And, you know, you're looking for, you know, any kind of good news around that team, and they have to do something in the short term here. They have to rebound and, you know, show that this is not going to be the Argos team all year long.
I had Glenn Suter on Sports Talk with Jock, as I do twice a week, our CFL insider, and he made a really interesting comment to me on Tuesday night. He basically said he didn't think the Toronto Argonauts were in shape. And I'm going, wow, that here we are, week number one for them, because this was their first game of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, they had training camp. They obviously had time to prepare for this game.
Yeah, I mean, this day and age, that just shouldn't happen.
No, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, wow, if that's the comment that, you know, our CFL insider is making, is that a reflection on the coach, Corey Chamberlain? Is that a reflection on the organization? Like, I expect more from Jim Popp. I expect more from the Toronto Argonauts. So I don't know if that is the case because I'm not close enough to it, but that's a pretty damning statement from our CFL insider.
Montreal Alouettes, again, a small sample size as they were on the bye as well in week two, looked a little better than expected in week one. The ongoing ownership crisis, I mean, we're hearing it's one group and then it's another group. Does this, in your mind, does that need to be resolved quickly, or, you know, or does the fact that the league is controlling the team, you know, taking the day-to-day pressure off, you know, is that enough just to keep that in the background?
Well, I think because the league is involved, it does take some of the pressure off the players because they know they're going to get a paycheck. They know the team is not going to fold tomorrow. You know, they're going to make the next week, and they're going to make the next paycheck. But, you know, anytime there's owner uncertainty hanging over your organization, I don't care what sport you are, that's got to weigh in the back of your mind. So, I don't know what they're going to do there, but it's something I think the league has got to resolve sooner rather than later.
Speaking of league involvement, of course, we were all over the Simone Lawrence case last week where, you know, he got the two-game suspension and, of course, appealed, and the appeal's not going to be heard until early in July, as I understand. So he gets to keep going until that is heard. But then Randy Ambrosi, the commissioner, very publicly issues a statement and issues it, you know, on league letterhead. So this is basically the league is speaking and not Randy Ambrosi speaking as an individual. I mean, I got to admit, I like the message where he condemns the PA for coming down on the side of the offender rather than on, you know, their injured brother.
I like the message too, but it was the wrong message at the wrong time.
Yeah,
it really was. You know, shame on Randy, shame on the league. You got to keep that stuff in house, and if you can't keep it in house, then you look almost amateurish. And you know, I have no problem with what the CFLPA did the next day, coming out with their own memo. Mm-hmm. You know, saying, hey, you know, we tried to negotiate this, we tried to, you know, go down the route that the NFL is doing, tried to make it more transparent, and the league said no. So now the league comes back looking worse, and some of the critics on Twitter, basically came out and said, well, if the league is so damn serious about, you know, player safety, why wasn't Simone Lawrence kicked out of that football game? And I can't argue with that point. I really can't, because he should have been kicked out of that game. And even the league admits he should have been kicked out of that game. So I just think it's a real bad look for the league. I agree with what you say. I think it's the right message. Mm-hmm. We all agree with the message.
Just the wrong
platform.
Wrong forum, wrong platform.
It was just the terrible platform. And you got to keep that in-house. And that's something that can be, you know, even though the CBA is done, signed, mm-hmm. sealed, delivered, the two sides should get together and streamline this process and make it right. But don't do it in the public. Do it behind closed doors, because I do believe Brian Ramsey and Randy Ambrosi can do the right thing for the league, because we shouldn't have this situation where Simone Lawrence can play, you know, act like a goofball, you know, celebrating sacks and all that kind of stuff when he shouldn't be playing.
Exactly. That's all the time we have for this week. We'll drop in another. I know time flies when you're having fun. We'll drop in another edition of the Calgary Stampeder podcast next Thursday. Matter of fact, we drop one every Thursday. So keep up to date with us. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love it if you could take the time out to give us a rating. Tell us what you think about the show. Drop us a story idea if you would like to do that. We want to get you involved in the Calgary Stampeder podcast.
I'm going to be a homer. Stamps win this weekend.
Okay, there you go. You got it here. Stamps win. Beat the BC Lions. The Vaughn and the Lions fall to 0-3. Hey, catch us up, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, you know, wherever you get your podcasts. So we're right here for you. This has been the Calgary Stampeder podcast. I'm Dave Rowe.
And I'm Jock Wilson. Thanks so much for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.